Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stone Chapel Podcast. My name is David Capes. I'm the director of the Lanier Theological Library. I want to welcome some new listeners up in Canada. It's a beautiful country, beautiful people up there. We are glad you have joined us. Please share this podcast with friends and family. We have Ed Stetzer as our guest today. He is a missiologist. We taught together at Wheaton College for a couple of years and really enjoyed our association, and I'm glad to continue that association. He's now at Biola University out in California. Now, you're going to hear him say some really interesting things. He's going to say that evangelicalism is in a mess right now. He's going to say it's been a freak show of late, those kind of things. But Ed is not giving up. He believes that there is real hope, and he is one of those out there vying for a new identity for the evangelical church these days, particularly in North America. Now, in other places around the world, evangelicalism is in a bit better shape. But where we are right now in North America, things aren't going so well. So, anyway, he lectured at the Lanier Theological Library November 2023. There's going to be a link in the show notes to this. So, stand by for Ed Stetzer here on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
I'm Ed Stetzer, the Dean of the Talbot School of Theology at Biola University.
Dr. Ed Stetzer, Ed, great to see
you. Good to see you, old friend.
It's good to see you sitting in that chair. And we're face-to-face. We don't have to be doing this over
Zoom. That's true. I think we can say old friend, though. Haven't we known each other for, I'm guessing,
A long time.
Close to 10 years.
Well, you're here to do a lecture this weekend at the Lanier Theological Library, and we've already had a good day or a half or so.
Anytime you're surrounded by cool Christian books is a good day.
It really is.
So, yeah, it is. I can't believe you work in this environment. We used to both work at Wheaton College.
Right.
But now you walk down the hallowed halls. I wish, you know, it's a podcast. I wish people could see the beauty of this library.
Yeah, well, you were on a radio show this morning.
I was, right in the very spot where we were recording this.
Yeah, and it's called the Ed Stetzer Live.
Mm-hmm. Very creative name. The creative people worked hard at Moody Radio to come up with the name Ed Stetzer Live.
Yeah.
David Capes Live.
It's every week you do this.
Every Saturday. Coast to coast, 250 outlets.
Wow.
So when you have your new book out, which is, what's your next book?
Yeah, Matthew Through Old Testament Eyes. Hey, for those who aren't going to be able to be here today.
Yeah, which is a shame. But by the time I listen, this will already have been done, so everyone who listens can't be here tonight.
But no, that's true. But we want to take this podcast and point people to the recording that's going to be there on our YouTube channel about what you're going to be talking about tonight. So this whole weekend has been sort of about evangelicals and culture.
Yeah.
And sort of living in that space here in America in particular. But we've also had a wonderful British evangelical, Amy Orr Ewing, who's been here and sees things a little differently. But we're talking in an American context primarily. You live in California. We live here in Houston. Mm-hmm. But the same could be true over much of the country.
Yeah, it's a mess right now in American evangelicalism, and I think everybody sort of acknowledges that. And I think there's a struggle for what is the future of evangelicalism, what should be evangelical identity, and more. You know, we're talking some about what evangelicalism is, what it could be, who's vying for its future identity, because I think I am. I think lots of people are trying to say, what should evangelicalism be? Which tells you that a lot of people are unsatisfied or dissatisfied with what evangelicalism is. I would be among those who are dissatisfied with what evangelicalism is.
But you're seeing a better day, aren't you? I mean, are you hopeful?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, when you're sort of in the arena on these issues, I mean, the way this works, you know, Billy Graham for decades was sort of the person who decided what evangelicalism is. It's a very famous quote of how you know if someone's an evangelical is whether or not they like Billy Graham. And it sounds like a throwaway joke line, but it actually has a lot of wisdom to it. Let me just unpack that for a minute. Mm-hmm. So everyone to the, I know they're simplistic categories, but everyone to the left of Billy Graham, or let's just say why a lot of mainline Protestants didn't like Billy Graham, because he was a conversionist and he would be theologically conservative in certain areas. So mainline Protestants are generally not evangelicals, and part, you can also, they don't like Billy Graham. Now, I guess there are exceptions. Don't misunderstand. There are exceptions. I mean, everyone sort of liked Billy Graham by the end, but during his ministry, it might have been a little different. Whereas to the right of Billy Graham would be fundamentalism. So fundamentalism is a real thing. There are 13,000 independent fundamental Baptist churches in the United States, for example, as fundamental Presbyterians. They don't like Billy Graham because he cooperates with other people that they would be uncomfortable with. And
too ecumenical.
Too ecumenical, too, you know, compromised. There's first and second degree separation questions. So in between mainline Protestantism and fundamentalism is where a lot of evangelicalism thrived. And most people in the space that use the word evangelical would say they like Billy Graham. So we're going to talk some about that. But what happened was Billy Graham was the shaper of the movement. So Billy Graham would actually cooperate with some people and then not cooperate with others. We have letters when Christianity Today was founded by Billy Graham where they said, no, let's not have that person write. They were trying to shape who was and who was not in the movement. And so for decades, and really centuries before that, I use the example in my forthcoming book of a potter at a potter's wheel. Now, you've seen a potter's wheel. You know, I mean, you've seen movies, right? Spins around. And the term when a potter's working on the clay, maybe making a bowl, is if there's too much clay, they remove some, and that's called throwing. So they throw to the side, or they want to add some. Maybe they want to add a bubble or a ridge onto a plate. They throw clay into it. Mm. So it's called throwing. So right now, we had a potter for decades, and that potter was primarily Billy Graham and the structures and institutions he created, like Christianity Today, like Lausanne. His influence on the National Association of Evangelicals was unparalleled. So he kind of would throw certain things in and remove certain things, and it was not just him. It was Ockenguy, Harold Ockenguy, it was Carl Henry. You know, there's a group of older white men who sort of described and defined what evangelicalism is. And when you say that, that can be triggering to some people, but that's a factual situation. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're in a season of contested identities. No one individual or institution is saying, well, let's throw this part out or throw this in. I said on NPR's Morning Edition, we're talking about some of the struggles in evangelicalism, and I said there are some things we need to disciple into evangelicalism, and some things we need to disciple out of evangelicalism. And, you know, I explained the word disciple because it was NPR. It's not exactly
They wouldn't know
what that is. So I think right now we're in the season when people have different prescriptions to the current maladies of evangelicalism. You asked if I'm encouraged. I don't know where that's going to end. Some people are going to end up outside of evangelical faith practice, sometimes because of their theological beliefs, sometimes because evangelicalism jettisons them out. Some people are going to be brought into that. In the last few years, we've seen a lot of more politics than the last 20 years brought in. Some people say, well, maybe that should be out, but that is not dissimilar to the way it looked in the 80s, you know, and then people pushed against that. So right now, I think we're in an internal struggle of who we are and what we want to be. And I don't know how that ends. Yeah. I know I'm going to keep loving Jesus. I'm going to love the Word of God. What the evangelical movement is 10 years from now, I don't know.
Yeah. Part of, I think, understanding it where it is now, you've got to know a little bit about the history, too. And and that's a part of the thing that we don't know.
Right.
Because evangelicalism isn't just something that happens here in the United States. It's really a worldwide phenomenon.
Right.
And understanding sort of its roots and stuff. So is there a particular book that you can think of that sort of explains that history, if people wanted to go out and
see
like
that? 100 books that do that. I think
the most recent
one that I like was Tommy Kidd's book on evangelicalism.
Thomas A. Kidd.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like, because I mean, again, people, Alistair McGrath, I mean, this is like the first three chapters of my book is quoting 50 people who've written books on evangelicalism. But I would say that part of the challenge, particularly as historians, right now we're kind of in a season where sometimes Christian historians seem to me to be struggling how to articulate the movement. If you read an historian describe evangelicalism and you don't recognize what you're reading, like, I don't think that it could be that you aren't aware of some of the currents that were there. So I think there are good books that help us to say, you know, we need to be more aware of some of the currents that are there. Sometimes it's not you being aware of currents, it's that they're engaging in a caricature, because there are significant places. Well, first of all, there are some evangelical historians who just have a lot of angst, and you can see that reflected in there. There's often a bit of a cachet that comes with being critical. I get asked to write in all kinds of places, and you can really feel the draw towards being that. But I like, you know, how Mark Knoll sort of wrote about evangelicalism. He always spoke of himself as like a wounded lover. Like, he loves the movement, and he's critical of the movement out of love. And when I read an historian, for example, that's sort of what I'm looking for. And that's not the only historian that I read, because I think it's good to read people who are just like overly critical. I even read the caricatures, and part of the preparation for this book I did. But the reason is I want to understand where people are coming from. And sometimes what I think is a caricature is actually true. And it might take me two or three books to actually see the light. There are some unhealthy things in the water of evangelicalism that I think we need to disciple out of the movement. And I'm going to talk about that.
It needs to be thrown out.
Yeah, thrown out using the Potter's thing. And yeah. I think healthy self-examination is a good God-honoring thing. There are also things that I think some people would like to throw out that I think need to be central to the movement. I think a higher view of conversion, for example. I'm not embarrassed by my view of conversion or evangelicals' emphasis on conversion. Mm-hmm. I think we need to focus more on conversion. I think we need to focus more on common mission, not to the detriment of others. I think every evangelical, like when we sort of talk to one another, when we're outside of the spotlight or the, you know, we're like, man, when did Jesus change your life is the kind of thing that we say to one another. And that speaks to a conversion. So in the panel, when David Fleming asked me to define evangelicalism, I gave a really long answer after the really short answer. But the really short answer is that they're Orthodox conversionary Protestants. Of course, when you say that, people are like, well, aren't there Catholic evangelicals? And are there non-Orthodox evangelical? They're all conversionary. No, but in general, they're Orthodox conversionary Protestants. Orthodox in belief and practice, holding to what historic Protestantism. Conversionary, very centered on women and men receiving by grace and through faith the good news of the gospel. Mm. And Protestants, because, I mean, historically, this is a movement in and within Protestantism. Full disclosure, I'm a Christian today because of the charismatic Catholic movement that was kind of an evangelicalism inside Catholicism that got a hold of my mother, who then one day, she'd later become Episcopal. I got in trouble one day, shocking. And she,
can't imagine.
She
can't
sent imagine me that. To Christian camp. I was youth group age as punishment. Every youth director in America is horrified by that idea. But she sent me to Christian camp as punishment, and there I heard the gospel at a charismatic Episcopal youth camp called Camp Wingman. So again, I say that there are exceptions to all of these things, but the exceptions don't change the reality that maybe an easy definition, if you have just three words, is Orthodox conversionary Protestants.
Yeah. Now, tell us a little bit more about your book. You mentioned your book. I know it's not complete yet. So the book.
I apologize, InterVarsity.
Do you have a title you're using right now?
No. I use it more of descriptive. I say it's the current state and future prospects of evangelicalism, but that's a really lame title.
Okay. So. And one of the things that we were a part of in helping you get to England, stay there, is you were your resident there at Yarnton Manor.
Yarnton Manor is, of course, the partner location of Linear Theological Library in the UK, and you take the S2 bus, in case you're wondering, you take the S2 bus right down the road to Wycliffe Hall. So I taught there, lived there for the fall at autumn, they say there. Yeah. Michaelmas is how they call the term, and I taught at Wycliffe Hall at Oxford for that fall term, and will be ongoing teaching there back in, I don't know when this airs, but back in December 23 and then back in May 24. And if you want to come study with us at Wycliffe, maybe you're listening in Europe, become a student at Wycliffe. If you're listening in America, you can also take a Talbot course at the same time. I'll be teaching Wycliffe and Talbot students simultaneously in the same classroom. So come study with us at Talbot if you're here in the North American context.
Well, that would be terrific.
It'd be fun.
That would be good. Yeah. Now, this is for a master's level course?
Well, it's different. You know, the British system is different.
Different.
So, but for the students at Talbot, it's a master's level course that they can take. I think actually you can take sometimes for DMIN credit as well. We have a really robust DMIN program at Talbot as well.
Yeah. So is there more research to be done, or have you done all the research, just a matter now of writing?
Well, that's a great question. I would say that the research is done. The first two-thirds, maybe three-fourths of the book's done. I'm just trying to land the plane on some conclusions. And, you know, one of the things, just transparently, David, I don't know if you've noticed, but evangelicalism has been a bit of a freak show the last 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in some ways glad I didn't write the book when I was supposed to.
Right. Because it would have to rewrite it.
Yeah, exactly. Even some of the key players have shifted. You know, one of the things that we've seen happen in the last few years is that kind of the fringes, what were once on the fringes of evangelicalism, have moved to the center of evangelicalism. But the last few years have just turned everything up and down. So I'll talk some more about that in the lecture people can watch as well. But it's a strange time. But I'm a missiologist. I'm not trying to be, I mean, the historians tell better histories than I ever will. I have to touch on history because it's one of the subdisciplines of missiology. But as a missiologist, I'm answering questions about where has the syncretism come in? And, you know, again, what needs to be discipled out or thrown out? You know, I'm using that as the Potter term. Mm-hmm. And what needs to be discipled in? Those are the kind of questions that missiologists ask. You know, I'm the regional leader for Lausanne, North America. So I meet with the heads of the regions from the other regions around the world. I think there's 8 other regions. And they're like, what is going on in American evangelicalism? Earlier this week, I was in Canada. I was in Canada speaking to a Baptist denomination in Canada, and they were happy and unified. So it is possible. But there
it just seems to be impossible in the 48 lower states.
Well, I would say people around the world are saying that there's something wrong with American evangelicalism. If the rest of the world's looking at us and saying, you guys have got some really serious issues you need to address, I think we should take that seriously. And that's part of what I'm trying to look at as a missiologist.
Is there a section of the world that you think really has its act together? Is there a particular place? I know we all have our challenges,
yeah.
But is there something we could model ourselves on?
Well, because of culture and because of cultural context, every cultural context both brings opportunity for gospel clarity and opportunity for gospel dilution. So, you know, we would say, do we look at the persecuted church and do we say, man, thank God for the persecuted church. For sure, there's certain things where the persecuted church is at work. However, we would also say that there's going to be theologically problematic things in some of that area. So we look at the church in Brazil, which is one of the fastest growing Brazilian evangelicalism. I mean, last time I checked, there would be more evangelicals in Brazil than the U.S. by 2040, I think. And robust, beautiful. You know, I preach often down at Cidade Viva in João Pessoa, which is right on the tip that points to Africa in the northeast of Brazil. And I love that church. The pastor's a dear friend. You know, I would also say that that neo-Pentecostalism, which is huge in Brazil, perhaps half the evangelicals, is really theologically problematic. Now, again, if I'm guessing we have Pentecostals listening, and
sure,
the Pentecostals in Brazil think neo-Pentecostalism is theologically problematic. I would look at the church in Brazil and say, thank God for what's going on. We talk about the global south and Africa. So, you know, 2,000 years, I don't know that anyone's walked it perfectly because we're imperfect people in broken cultural systems. So I think we can learn parts from other people as well. So I want to learn from Brazilian evangelicals the passion for evangelism combined with a passion for societal transformation that I see in their favelas and as they're showing and sharing the love of Jesus. And I want to learn from British evangelicalism to engage the educated classes in a way that they have. And I want to learn from Filipino evangelicalism and their passion to engage the 1040 window. So I think it's a platter and array to learn from.
We await the book then. Ed Stetzer, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
Hey, stand by for a nugget of wisdom from Dr. Ed Stetzer. Ed did a great job in his lecture here at Lanier Library. You can find that link in the show notes below. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. Thanks to Kathy Capes for editing. And thanks to Ed for being here on the podcast. Our podcast comes courtesy of the Lanier Theological Foundation. If you're new to the podcast, come on back. We drop every Tuesday. You can like us, subscribe to us, you can rate us. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to be in touch, it's very easy. Email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. That's podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Until next time, I'm David Capes. Thanks for listening.
You know, we're in the midst of a cultural convulsion, probably unlike anything we've seen since the late 60s. Everything feels like it's pulling apart. If we're going to walk through this time, both faithfully and fruitfully, we're going to need to build up reservoirs of resilience to make it through what's probably going to be a difficult 2 to 3 more years, and communities of support so we can walk through those times with others.